2023-823, Unite Here Local 5, the City and County of Honolulu. Arguing for the appellant, Gregory Kugel. Also appearing for the appellant, Lauren Shehase. Arguing for the appellee, Brad Saito. Arguing for the appellee intervener, Sharon Lovejoy. Argument on the merits.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Kugel, Mr. Saito, and Ms. Lovejoy. Are you already proceeding this morning with your arguments?
Yeah.
All right. My understanding is, Mr. Kugel, you've reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll give you a warning with 5 minutes to go. Mr. Saito, you'll go first. On behalf of appellees for 20 minutes, followed by Ms. Lovejoy. So we'll have a warning light when you hit 20 minutes, and then another at 30. So please proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice and Associate Justices, may it please the court. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom and the age of foolishness. Those are the famous opening words of Charles Dickinson's novel, A Tale of Two Cities. And they're equally applicable to this case, which could be called A Tale of Two Towers. For Local 5 and the residents of Waikiki, the approval of the first tower of the Ritz-Carlton Residences at 2121 Kuhio Avenue in 2013 was the best of times and the age of wisdom. 1 year later, the approval of the second tower at 2139 Kuhio, it became the worst of times and the age of foolishness, and I'll explain. Unite Here Local 5, the appellant in this case, is a labor union that represents 8,500 hotel and restaurant workers in the state of Hawaii, 6,000 of whom work in Waikiki. Local 5 has a vested interest in ensuring the viability of Waikiki's hotels and hotel industry so that Waikiki remains the anchor of the state's tourism industry. In 2012, intervener appellee PACREP II's corporate affiliate called PACREP LLC applied for a Waikiki special district permit to build a condo hotel at 2121 Kuhio Avenue. In the case of the Ritz-Carlton residences, each so-called hotel unit consists of a dwelling unit complete with bedrooms and kitchens, and each will be sold by the developer to individual owners as condominium units. Local 5 actively participated in the public hearings before the Department of Planning and Permitting and the Honolulu City Council for the 2121 permit. The linchpin of Local 5's concerns was that there was no assurance that the purchasers of the hotel units would use them as hotel units, but could use them instead as multifamily residential units. This was important to Local 5 because the LUO, the Land Use Ordinance, provides for parking for hotels on a 1-to-4 ratio, meaning one parking stall per four units, whereas for residential uses, it's a 1-to-1 ratio, one residential unit, one parking stall.
How many parking stalls are there?
Your Honor, I believe that in the entire podium, there is approximately 200. What was approved was enough units for the 4-to-1 ratio, and there are a handful, I believe it's less than 10 or 20, extra parking stalls over and above the hotel requirement. Hotel units are also exempt from the park dedication requirements of the city subdivision code. Residential units are not. So Local 5 participated in the public hearings. It submitted plenty of letters. Those are in the record at the ZBA. And it also testified at the public hearings. In fact, one of those letters, which I think will be important for this court, was an August 22, 2012 letter in which Local 5 was sent to the director of DPP, and Local 5 requested that it be considered a consulted party for purposes of the environmental review and approval of the 2121 project.
And what is the significance of that?
I'm sorry?
What is the significance of that? Once the request goes in, is that party considered to be a consulted party?
Yes. Now that's under
the... Or does there have to be an order?
No, it requests to be a consulted party, and it will be deemed a consulted party for the Chapter 343 or the environmental review. The importance of that, though, is that the Department of Planning and Permitting always knew that Local 5 was an interested party in the 2121 permit. In fact, that the ZBA Director Ada testified that he was aware of Local 5's concerns about the 2121 project, and of its interest in that project.
So does this go to the issue of lack of notice about the modification of the permit? And if so, could you explain how it would go to that issue.
It does, and that is because it was clear to the DPP from years before what we referred to in the brief as the secret waiver letter, which was the letter dated September 6th of 2013, that came after the 2121 permit, relieving it of the very condition that Local 5 had advocated so hard for. And the at the ZBA hearing and the ZBA decision and the circuit court decision, Local 5 was faulted for not specifically requesting notice of a letter that it had no idea was ever issued.
But what is the legal basis that they cited for the assertion that you were required to make a separate request for that to be provided subsequent notice?
They cite a DPP rule that says any party can request to have notice of decisions.
But what is the definition of decision? Why is the letter assumed to be a decision?
You're exactly right. That letter is not a decision.
Because decision is defined specifically, correct?
It is. It's an action of the director on an application for a permit.
And it says decision means the written findings of fact, conclusions of law, and decision, and orders signed by the director in any proceeding. That's the definition of decision. And when the requirement that there be a request, it refers to that kind of decision, not a modification of a permit condition.
That's exactly right. And there are two appellate court cases directly on point. The Hokulele case, in which the ICA held that a letter written by the director of DPP was not an appealable decision, and also the Kelberg case, Kelberg number one, I suppose it is, again dealt with a letter by the planning department. That case, the Big Island Planning Department, was not an appealable decision.
But what about the issue that they point to this rule? They said, hey, under the rule, you're required to say you wanted notification. You didn't submit a request. End of discussion is what I understand the position to be. What's your response to that?
My response to that is, first off, they knew before that letter was ever issued that Local 5 had actively participated in the public hearing process and had submitted at least four letters in relation to the 21 permit, advocating specifically for this condition, condition C and condition G, which were then being asked to be waived. And the director knew about those concerns.
I think they would cheerfully acknowledge that and say, hey, you just didn't put in the request you needed to put in. And again, I don't want to mischaracterize their position. We'll hear from them momentarily. But what is it your position that a notice requirement didn't apply to a decision of this kind? Or is it that, in effect, you had let them know enough you'd given them enough of an indication that you wanted notice to satisfy the rule? I'm trying to understand which of those two, or perhaps it's both.
I think it's the second. They were on notice that we were interested in and had participated in the 2121 permit process.
Mr. Kugel,
yes.
I know that there's a dispute between the parties as to whether or not you received notice of the decision itself, but because you weren't CC'd on the cover letter. However, assuming that you, which I know that you don't agree with, but assuming that you were given notice of the decision, then isn't the next logical argument that if you were given notice of the decision, why were you not then given notice of the modification?
Well, I'm sorry. Maybe you didn't understand. We had notice of the issuance of the 2121 permit.
Oh, I thought you disputed that. Okay.
We were not CC'd on the issuance of the permit, but we participated and we monitored it. We knew when it would be issued, and we knew it was issued, and we were very happy
with
it.
So how come you couldn't monitor a letter that was oral and keep up with the result when it was a private letter?
Well, that's a question that almost doesn't require an answer. It was a verbal request, and it was a written letter back to the developer, not copied to anybody else.
Well, Mr. Kugel, then what would have been the action you would have taken in the event that you'd received the notice that you suggest you're entitled to?
Well, I don't believe that is an appealable decision by the director to the Zoning Board of Appeals. Had we been given notice of it?
Why not? Isn't it an inaction? If you couldn't approve, if you couldn't appeal a modification, then how could it? And I'm not suggesting you could do it in this case, because you didn't get notice, but how, if a modification couldn't be appealed, then where would the an interested party be able to contest it?
Well, that's exactly the dilemma that Local 5 faced itself, because less than a year later, when the second permit came out that contained all of the same factual findings and analysis about the problem between hotel units versus residential units, lack of parking, et cetera, it contained no mention of the conversation and the waiver letter that had been issued, and it simply came out minus the critical conditions that were found in the 2121 permit, which were conditions C and G. And so Local 5 would do what anybody would do and filed an appeal and said, well, that's the textbook definition of arbitrary and capricious, to have the same project, the same condo hotel, related affiliate developers. It's going to be put to the same use. It's the same Department of Planning and Permitting, the same land use ordinance, same law, same facts. And they came out with a different result.
I'm still reaching for the answer to your question. Sorry, go ahead, yeah, Justice McKenna.
You know, the record does contain two other cases that apparently you filed against PACREP LLC and PACREP 2 LLC, 13147 DEC action and 141753 DEC action. Do those just relate to the argument of segmentation of environmental impact statements?
Yes, Your Honor. Those are Chapter 343 okay. cases, which are direct civil action cases.
Right. And what would have prevented you from filing a declaratory relief action based on one of your arguments here, which is, I understand, is that this was actually a major modification of the permit, which required that they go through the entire process, or they go through some process that was not followed here?
Well, our argument is actually that even if it was a minor modification under the ordinance, and the director has the discretion to issue a minor modification, but under 21-2.20K, he has to make three findings. He didn't make any of those findings. That waiver letter contains a one-sentence statement, no explanation.
So what would have prevented you from filing a DEC action to say that, you know, it's an ineffective minor modification and or it's a major modification?
Well, aside from the fact that we didn't know about it until the week before the contested case hearing.
But after that, when you did learn about it.
So our position is, and I think this was dealt with this court's decision recently in the In Re Maui Electric case, and that was a case, and there was some discussion between the majority and the dissent about whether a Chapter 632 DEC action, a civil action, is a substitute for or can be used in place of a Chapter 91 appeal. And as I read that case, it suggests that just because a DEC action would be available, if there's a Chapter 91 appeal that can deal with the very issues that are at issue in the case and on the permit, that route doesn't need to be pursued.
So your position here is that 2121 and 2139 is all actually part of one project pursuant to the joint development agreement, and therefore you can appeal issues with respect to 2121 in this administrative appeal.
Well, I think that's one way to put it. Our position is that the modification letter, the waiver letter, and the 2121 permit were so inextricably intertwined in the 2139. And the reason that is because that's how DPP and PACREP defended the case. They walked into the Zoning Board of Appeals, and in fact, just a week before the hearing started, gave us this letter, said, this is our exhibit. Both of their pre-hearing statements filed before the ZBA said, well, ZBA, and I'll paraphrase, I could quote them, but I'll paraphrase. They said, ZBA, there's no inconsistent treatment because guess what? We waived that condition in 2121, and therefore treating 2139 differently without the key conditions is really no difference because we waived it.
Okay, so my question, defense. My follow-up question here then is, the relief that you're requesting here, is it that you are asking us to rule on the merits, or are you asking us to remand to the circuit court, which found that there was no jurisdiction on this issue?
We are asking that you rule on the merits. We argued to the ZBA and to the circuit court and to this court that it was error for conditions like C and G from the 2121 permit to not be imposed on the 2139 permit. And I'm glad Your Honor asked that, because questions were raised about, is this case moot? Can the court afford relief? And we filed a motion last week that answered those questions, I believe, talked about the Morgan versus Planning Commission case, that the planning department in this case has the inherent jurisdiction to modify and amend conditions on permits. But more importantly, and something that wasn't in the memo we filed last week, is the fact that in the public report, which is required under HRS 514B, the condo statute.
This is in the record, I assume, counsel?
It is.
Okay, thank you.
The public report was Exhibit 10 at the Zoning Board of Appeals, and Exhibit I to Exhibit 10 is a reservation of developers' rights. And in that reservation of rights, the developer, to each of its purchasers, told them, we reserve to ourselves the right to impose restrictive covenants on the project until the year 2033. And it also said, we impose the right to impose any requirements to comply with land use or other permits for this project.
So what you're asking us to do is rule on the merits that conditions C and G should be reinstated. Is that what you're asking? And that's what your argument is regarding the developer can require the new owners of these individual units to comply with.
That's right. The restrictive covenant condition that was in 2121 and was waived and is not in 2139 should be in 2139 also.
Because there are two, right?
There's two.
Parking space and then the dedication to the parks. So
those are the two facts. They're dealt with in the same conditions. There's condition C, which says the developer has to record a restrictive covenant that identifies those units in the tower that will be for hotel use and they'll be placed in a hotel pool, and it has to identify those units that are available for multi-family residential use, and it has to comply with the parking and park dedication requirements.
But no agency or the court has actually ruled yet on the merits of whether or not those conditions can appropriately be deleted. In other words, because the zoning board on your appeal said no jurisdiction, it's never really been substantively addressed. So in answer to Justice McKenna's question, I know you've asked your preferences for us to get to the merits, but wouldn't an alternative also be that a remand to the zoning board because their determination that there was no jurisdiction was wrong either under a Kelberg analysis or other types of analysis, and that they should be making the first decision on the merits?
I think you're correct. What we argued to the ZBA and to the circuit court was that those conditions were never effectively deleted. They remain in the 2121 permit, and they should have been, because there is no difference in the project or the use or the applicant or anything else between 2121 and 2139, they should have been carried over. You will hear a lot of talk about deference to the director, and the director's decision should be given deference. The one we say should be given deference was the initial decision of the director when he looked at this project and he said, I see a problem with condominium hotel units, and I'm going to impose reasonable conditions to require that hotel, that what we approve as a hotel is in fact used as hotel units and not long-term residential units.
Mr. Kugel, then, you are conceding there should be an opportunity to establish a basis for the modification of the permit and a basis for removing conditions C and G?
I'm not conceding that. I believe our position at the ZBA was that that so-called modification was not legally effective. In fact, it didn't comply with the land use ordinance requirements itself.
I understand you're saying procedurally the process that was followed by the planning director was not a procedure that allowed you an opportunity to participate. But as Justice Pollack says, it would seem that you would concede that the land use ordinance provides for an opportunity for a modification of the permit.
It does. I would agree with you, and I would also probably agree with your statement that the wrong that occurred here was the DPP and PAC Rep's decision to use the waiver letter as a sword and a shield to defend the arbitrary and capricious claim before the Zoning Board of Appeals, but to at the same time tell the ZBA, and they bought it, that, oh, by the way, you can't really consider whether that waiver was effective or not. You have to give it preclusive effect, and you can't look at 2121. Those conditions were waived. You can't second-guess the director's secret decision to waive those, and you're stuck with that with the 2139. And so you're right. We never got the director has never had the opportunity to
enter findings of fact and conclusions of law for both of the permits.
Yes.
Or even to determine whether the modification is appropriately minor or major. I mean, that's actually not been determined.
It has not. It's been characterized in the briefs by the DPP as that he did, in fact, make a minor modification determination, but there's no support for that in the record.
You in need fact,
no further than the letter itself.
And yeah, in fact, it would seem that it's de facto a major, because since there's no findings that it satisfies that it's reasonable, does not significantly increase the intensity, does not create I mean, there's no findings in the letter, so therefore, since it's not, it doesn't satisfy a minor, it would appear a strong argument could be made that this is a major and there's no new permit, so it's a problem.
That's right. The only way to do a major is to reapply for a new Waikiki Special District permit.
You know, if you look at Kelberg, what Kelberg said was because he did not receive notice that he was not required to exhaust administrative remedies in order to appeal. So how does that apply in your case? Because that doesn't mean that you get to go to ZBA.
I think that I understand your point, but if you follow that to its logical conclusion, on the eve of the contested case hearing, when Local 5 did get notice of the September 6, 2013 letter that purported to waive the condition, that it should have abandoned the ZBA case that it was about to commence and run to the circuit court. And I think that
no, I'm talking about 2121.
We had no concern with 2121.
Right?
We advocated in the public hearing process for the imposition of conditions, and the director agreed with us.
Would you have been able to file a request for declaratory relief in, I guess it's with the director of the ZBA, arguing what you just articulated here, that it doesn't comply with a minor, and this is a major? It doesn't comply with the major.
I think that the declaratory ruling procedure under the DPP rules is different, and there's a lot of discretion for the DPP to not even entertain such a request or a ruling. And as I said, we were in the midst or about to commence the evidentiary portion of a contested case hearing on the very permit that lacked the conditions that they say had been waived by the letter.
In your view, is the record in that 2139 proceeding, is it adequate? Is it an appropriate venue to litigate the 2121 issues, or should that be done in a DEC action?
No, I think it should have been done there. The case was defended by the developer and the DPP by saying it wasn't arbitrary and capricious because we waived that condition. And we believe that it was appropriate in that case. They brought it up in that case. We did not, as they concede, and as the ZBA found in finding of fact 7, we didn't even know about it until that case commenced. And at that point, when they argued to the ZBA that condition was waived, therefore the second permit couldn't be arbitrary and capricious because there was no difference, we said, well, that waiver wasn't effective. And the ZBA is the agency that determines the actions of the director in enforcing the land use ordinance.
But the 2139 hearing only went to 2139. So how can, isn't your argument that you could argue 2121 in the 2139 hearing? But that's already been permitted, right? 2121's all, at this point in time, in front of the ZBA, it's already gone, so.
Yes, and if 2121 was given res judicata effect, we wouldn't even be having this argument. I mean, if that permit was not appealed, the only party that was aggrieved by that permit was the developer. They didn't appeal it. I mean, the answer is obvious why they didn't appeal it, because they thought, well, we'll just go to the back door, have a conversation, and get this lifted, and we'll not tell anybody, not the public, not Local 5, who is very interested, we'll just have that condition lifted.
So my question is, how can you address, besides a deck action, how can you address in the 2139 hearing what happened in 2121, or get relief for what happened in 2121?
Well, we introduced the 2121 permit and said, put these two permits next to each other. They're mirror images except for one problem, no condition-C. So the 2121 permit was before the ZBA.
That more as an exhibit, though, right?
It was an exhibit, yes. We were not arguing that the DPP made any mistake by issuing 2121. In fact, we advocated the DPP was perfectly correct in issuing 2121 with its conditions.
But doesn't the developer then presumably going to want to defend the modification, want to bring in factual evidence to indicate that what was done by the director was appropriate? And is that something that can be done effectively in the form of this appeal on the other 2139 permit?
Well, they brought it into 2139. We didn't introduce that exhibit. DPP introduced it, and the developer introduced the waiver letter. They said, there's no inconsistency here because the condition was waived. Look at this letter. And so we didn't make that argument. We didn't object to the letter coming in. The letter wasn't excluded from evidence. It was considered by it was admitted to the ZBA and considered by the ZBA. And we argued on the merits that letter did not satisfy the minor modification or major modification provisions of the land use ordinance, and it was ineffective as a waiver of the condition. Therefore, you still had 2121 with condition C and condition G, and you now have 2139 without condition C, without condition G, under the same facts, same project, same developers, same uses, inherently arbitrary and capricious.
Very well. Anything further at this time, or would you like to reserve your time?
I don't. Thank you, Chief Justice. I wanted to save 5 minutes.
All right.
Thank you.
We'll hear from Mr. Saito at this point. Mr. Saito.
Good morning, Chief Justice, Associate Justices.
Good morning.
May it please the Court. In this case, Local 5 challenged the 2139 Cujillo WSD permit. And it did so pursuant to the rules that allow for these types of appeals to occur.
I'm sorry. Could you just speak up a little bit?
Yeah.
Thank you.
The right to appeal administrative decision is basically statutory in this case. Local 5 doesn't have any due process rights because they don't have a property interest. So what we're considering today is their rights under the Administrative Procedures Act.
They have due process rights?
Really? They represent hotel workers. They're trying to ensure that this is a hotel.
On the facts of this case, Local 5 doesn't have a right to employment at the project site. There's no contract for employment. They don't own the underlying real property. They don't own abutting real property.
They have no right to notice? Is that what you're saying? In other words, they can participate in the 2121 permit, participate in the hearings, participate all along. A permit is issued, and it can secretly be changed, and they don't have to be notified? That's the argument you're making?
Your Honor, that is the analysis employed by Swire Properties. And so
by what? Again, you're speaking quietly, so it's hard for us to hear. Which
in Swire Properties versus zoning board of appeals, there was a planned housing development project approved by the city council, and the Department of Land Utilization was given the authority to approve modifications to the project.
That's a little bit different. I mean, there's a phone call, and they don't tell anybody about it. And they modified, they removed conditions. Isn't that, I mean, he wasn't, was Unite Here Local 5 told, oh, by the way, it's okay, we might modify it and not tell you. So it's not analogous, is it?
I'm not sure that it was just a phone call. There's a lot of correspondence regarding 2121 that's not in the record, because that wasn't the subject of the appeal before the Zoning Board of Appeals. There are also pieces of correspondence.
Now, that would have been incumbent upon you guys to put that in the record, if it's other than a phone call, right?
Well, our position at the Zoning Board of Appeals was that its jurisdiction was limited to 2139.
Is there a formal request in the record where they asked for a request to modify? I mean, isn't that, the rule seems to indicate that there's supposed to be a formal request to the director.
The director's response, the letter that relieves 2121 of the condition, states that this is in response to a letter received of a certain date. I don't think a copy of the requesting letter is in the record, but that letter from the director saying that he's responding to a letter from PACREP is in the record.
So is it in the 2121 record?
That would be part of the 2121 file.
Before the ZBA, I know before the circuit court, there was a request to by the petitioners here, appellants here, to have the 2121 record be made part of the record. Was there such a request at the ZBA?
There was not, Your Honor.
Okay.
So you're telling me the letter that was not admitted into evidence in 2139, requesting that the conditions be removed, is part of the record in 2121?
It would be part of the administrative record.
What's that?
DPP's files.
Oh, so it's not open to the public?
Those are open to the public.
What
I'm suggesting is that letter was not offered as an exhibit before the Zoning Board of Appeals and accepted into evidence. At the circuit court, Local 5 asked that all of the 2121 files be added to the record. The circuit court did not grant that request. They said that DPP is to provide its files to Local 5, and it will be incumbent on Local 5 to move those items into the record. Local 5 never attempted to do so.
I'd like to understand DPP's position. Do you believe that Local 5 would have the standing to file a request for declaratory relief either at the ZBA, or I don't know if it's with the director or with the ZBA, probably with the director, or in circuit court seeking a determination that this modification is ineffective?
With respect to a petition for declaratory ruling, they could certainly do that with DPP. In terms of filing.
Well, what of their argument that your DPP is actually not required to take it up?
That is true. It is discretionary by the department. And so it.
So therefore, you would concede that they have a right to bring a DEC action under 632 to seek a declaration that the modification is ineffective?
I believe they would be entitled to bring that action. We would defend that action, and we would try and employ the Swire properties and citizens versus reckless development analysis. Again, in both of those cases, the court said that only the applicant for a permit is entitled to notice of the decision, and that's notwithstanding participation in public hearings and.
They're not contesting notice of the permit. They got notice. They're saying we have actual notice of the permit.
That's correct, Your
Honor. And it appears that in terms of. So you're saying that no one is entitled to any notice of a modification, whether it's minor or major?
The applicant is always entitled, and any member of the public that requests notice from the department is also entitled.
Well, what rule is that again?
It's Rule 6.2 of the DPP.
And what's your response to Mr. Kugel's argument that in many, many different ways, Local 5 had made its interest in receiving notice known to the director?
I would say, Your Honor, that is the same argument made by the plaintiffs in Swire Properties and Citizens versus Reckless Development. And in both of those cases, the court determined that they needed to follow the.
Okay, so you're saying that this was the decision, the modification was the decision that they had to request notice of pursuant to Rule 6.2.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But then you're also arguing that this is not a decision that they could appeal to the ZBA. Is that right?
No, we are arguing that they didn't properly raise the issue at the ZBA because it was not addressed by the petition for appeal. We do not dispute that Local 5 could have made a timely request and appeal at the ZBA regarding the modification.
But they didn't know about it. And they didn't know about it because you folks give them notice of the permit, let them know what the conditions are, and then you secretly change it. And you say, too bad you didn't appeal. And I'd like to go back to the question that I asked for previously. I don't understand how a modification fits the definition under Section 1-1 of decision. It says, first of all, you said, the director shall mail the written decision to the applicant and upon request shall give notice of the decision. But the decision is defined specifically to be written findings of facts, conclusions of law, and decision and orders signed by the director. And there's no written findings and findings of facts and conclusions of law in that letter that you gave. This doesn't constitute a decision, and therefore this provision that you're referring to that you have to request notice wouldn't apply. And in fact, it would seem to be, to me, it would seem that there, a strong argument can be made is that when you, the decision, which was the permit in this case, once you give notice of that, those people entitled to notice of that decision would be entitled automatically to notice of any modification. Otherwise, why would you even give them notice of the permit? If you're changing the permit, you need to tell the people, look, what we just gave you has been changed.
I certainly understand that argument, Your Honor, and it may be the better policy.
As a matter of fact, your argument was that you did give them notice, that you did give them notice, and even though they weren't CC'd on the decision, but your argument has always been that they although Mr. Kugel doesn't dispute that, that they you did give them notice. Isn't that your argument has always been of the decision, of the initial decision in 2121?
I'm not sure that how they got notice of the 2121 decision. Mr. Kugel stated today that they monitored
the
project.
Didn't you argue that you gave them notice?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Okay.
Mr. Kugel stated here today that his client monitored the project and was aware of the 2121 Kuhio permit decision.
How is modification of the 2121 permit lawful and appropriate?
Well, Your Honor, it is authorized by ordinance, Section 21-2.20K of the Land Use Ordinance. There is also a condition in the permit itself that refers to that section of the land use ordinance.
Mr. Saito, can you help me with that analysis? You're talking about 21-2.2K, but are you talking about provision in K that pertains to a minor alteration? Is that it, K1?
That's correct, Your Honor, which states the director can administratively modify.
All right, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but could you then continue your explanation about how this is a minor alteration? Are you saying it was just consistent with the conditions of the permit to take this action?
Yes, Your Honor. The modification was the removal of a condition of approval. It didn't change the project that was approved. The Waikiki Special District Permit is a design approval. It's not a substantive land use approval. Hotels are a permitted use in the resort district, as are multifamily dwellings.
C1 required the developer to submit, indicate the units to be placed in the hotel pool for DPS's review and approval. And once the units were approved, this was going to be a covenant running with the land, filed running with the land, a declaration that no owner could change the use of that unit.
That's correct,
right?
Your Honor.
And you're saying that now a representation that it's going to be primarily for hotel use, whatever that definition is it like 50% or 50% plus one would be the same thing?
Your Honor, a couple of points on this line of question. And the first.
How many parking stalls are there, by the way?
I don't have the specific number handy.
I think they said 100.
Right. It's, Somewhere around 200.
200, okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
So in terms of...
You said that they went through the minor modification procedure. I mean, you said that this was a minor modification.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But the director testified that he didn't follow the correct procedure, right?
I'm not sure I understand the question, Your Honor.
Well, when they asked him about, he was asked, did you comply with paragraph L? Well, and maybe I didn't write it in there, but there was a change. So the director kind of acknowledges that, because there's certain things that have to be found in order to find a minor modification, and the director didn't make any findings.
I agree with that, Your Honor. There are no findings in that letter. That letter was not the issue that was appealed before the Zoning Board of Appeals, but yes.
So you just said the necessary findings weren't included in the record. I just want to, in the letter.
In the letter. That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So why isn't that a basis for questioning the legitimacy of the modification?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's a jurisdictional issue. Like I said, this
is... I thought I was hearing you say substantively it's okay. So not what you're saying is... substantively not okay, but procedurally they can't challenge it? Is that
as
your
a matter of fact, we admit that those findings were not in the letter. We are saying that the action taken was authorized, and we admit that Local 5 could have brought a challenge of that letter to the Zoning Board of Appeals, but they didn't.
How? So you're now conceding that to appeal to the ZBA, I thought it had to be a decision. An action. Is it an action by the director?
And because the modification is authorized by the land use ordinance, this is distinguishable.
So you're asking because, all right, action of the director. See, in Hokulele, the ICA held that an action had to be a final action, right? They apply the language.
In Hokulele, Your Honor, the ICA determined that a zoning clearance, which was not provided for by the text of the land use ordinance, was not an action of the director. It was a matter of practice by the department that was not provided for in any ordinance or administrative.
And also ruled that it wasn't a request for declaratory relief.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And to verify the zoning.
And it was not a modification.
So we would distinguish the modification letter by referring to the land use ordinance and saying that it is provided for by the LUO.
You're saying that they had 30 days from a letter that they had no notice of to file a appeal to the ZBA?
Yes, Your Honor.
I see. So how is anyone supposed to have appealed this letter if they had no notice?
Your Honor,
it?
If I may, they had an opportunity for notice. All they had to do was make a request. They didn't have.
All right, what if we
notice.
Disagree with you? Let's assume we disagree
yes,
with
Honor,
you that your Rule 6.2 does not apply to this letter, right? Decision, written findings of fact and conclusions of law. That's right. What they're... a request under 6.2 entitles them to.
Yes, Your Honor, that is the textual analysis of the rule. As a matter of practice, DPP will provide any document to somebody that requests it.
Under the UIPA or under the rules?
Normally, you don't even know it's in existence.
If I could explain this, the way to make a request is to refer to the property or project and to say, I would like notice of any decisions affecting this property or project. You don't have to know that there's going to be a modification letter to request notice.
It says definitely decision, though. Let me take you back. You stated just now that you didn't say that DPP had given Local 5 notice, and I want you to look at your briefing in the circuit court, specifically the ICA docket 1465. I think you did state that you gave... Local 5 notice of the initial decision. So then my question is, if you gave them notice, why didn't you give them notice of the modification?
Your Honor, the answer to that question is because there wasn't a request under the rules.
It almost sounds
like... And I would also point out that the conditions of these permits...
Well, why did you give them a copy of the decision then? If they didn't make a request, you said that you gave them a copy without a request, but you gave it to them. But then you don't give them the. Why would you not give them the modification, even if they didn't ask for it? Because you gave them a request for the. You gave them a decision.
Your Honor, I apologize if the briefing wasn't clear. I suppose we meant to say that they received notice. I'm not certain factually how that notice was provided to them. Mr. Kugu today suggested that they monitor the project, and that is my understanding of how they received notice.
Okay. What's your response to Mr. Kugel's argument that the developer put this modification in play in 2139 and thus became an appropriate subject of that action? That's what I understood his argument was, because I asked him, hey, is this the right place to do this? And he said, well, developer put it in. It was a subject of discussion. Well, what's your response to that argument?
First, Your Honor, we view the ZBA's jurisdiction as limited by the petition for appeal and its rules. So we don't think it was properly raised.
Anything under the ZBA's decision in that first case that affected 2121? Didn't they put a requirement that also affected both properties as a result of their decision in 2130 in the appeal?
Yes, Your Honor. They extended some of the conditions of approval from 2139 to 2121.
So they actually did affect both properties.
That permit decision does, Your Honor.
Are you saying that if they had been monitoring 2121, if Local 5 had been monitoring 2121 ZBA act, or director's action, as they said, they would have seen the modification?
Yes, Your Honor. If they did periodic reviews of the department's public files, a copy of those letters and correspondence pieces.
So you're saying that anyone that testifies and, you know, gets involved, they have to go make a request maybe every 15 days or so to make sure that they're notified. And this could go on forever, right? Because the director could make a modification any time at
this
point, right?
I'm not saying that, Your Honor. One request would be sufficient. If there was a request for notice of any decisions affecting the property, that would be a running request, and DPP would have provided.
Do your rules say anything about this?
What I would say is that if you look at the Citizens for Reckless Development case, they explained that that rule was adopted in response to Swire Properties, where the court noted that people that participate in public proceedings are not entitled to notice. So in Citizens versus Reckless Development, the court observed that DPP adopted Rule 6.2 specifically to create a process for public notice.
But you only refer to the initial decision. You don't refer to the modifications.
I understand that, Your Honor. But like I said, DPP would have provided a copy of this letter.
So how is any citizen supposed to know that? How is a citizen supposed to know that?
Your Honor, I think there are two things. One is that a citizen will understand that they can make a request for notice of decisions on a property, and that's all they really have to do.
And they're supposed to know that when a plain reading of the rule says decision only means findings of fact, conclusions of law, they're supposed to know that you construe it as any modifications as well.
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Kugel has argued that, and this court has put it before us, that there are certain findings and conclusions that arguably should have been made in that letter. And if so, then that letter would have been such a decision that they would get notice of. The thing is, we never really defended that letter in the administrative proceedings.
They say their position is you could, and it was in play, and it fairly could have been defended and could be on remand. What's your reaction to that?
Your Honor, I don't think that issue is properly part of the administrative order from the contested case hearing that is before this court.
Wasn't in the petition? Is that your argument? I know I've heard you say mention that before.
It wasn't in the petition. Okay. And I know that I'm running out of time. I don't want to take away too much from Ms. Lovejoy. I do want to emphasize, and you know, I understand that the court might find the Swire Properties analysis unpalatable at this point in time, but that was a modification by a letter, under the same basic scheme of regulations that we have here today. And
so this is continuing to happen at the Department of Planning. Permits are issued with conditions, and there are requests made subsequently, and modifications are made without notice.
It does happen, Your Honor, pursuant to the statutory scheme adopted by the City Council. This is legislative policy that DPP is implementing. And as I said, you know, if somebody had a property interest, then the analysis might be different. But in this case, you're looking at somebody that doesn't have a property interest, and, you know, that affects their rights. And
you think Local 5 doesn't care about parking for its members that work in Waikiki?
Your Honor, I don't see how the Local 5's members would be entitled to park on the project site.
No, that's not the point.
It's when you don't have enough parking, parking spills out into the street. Local 5 cares about parking in Waikiki.
Yes, Your Honor, I'm sure that they have that concern. I don't know that that rises to the level of a property interest for due process purposes. I mean, certainly it would give them standing to have a contested case hearing as they did, and as they could have with respect to 2121, but that's a different issue.
Very well. Anything further before we hear from Ms. Lovejoy?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Oh, I'm
sorry. Saying that they're entitled to, they have standing, and you've never contested standing.
That's correct,
so
Your Honor.
So even though they have standing, they're not entitled to notice.
Yes, Your Honor. They have the opportunity to request notice, and they would be entitled if they make that request.
Very well. Thank you. We'll hear from Ms. Lovejoy.
Thank you.
So then,
if you would perhaps raise the mic up. So very well. Thank you.
Yeah, good morning. So I'm here representing the developer of the 2139 project. The two projects have been conflated. They are being ultimately developed after they were permitted. They're now going forward and being operated as a unified project.
There was no joint development agreement before the first permit?
Joint development agreement that actually includes the entire block, including owners that have nothing to do with these particular projects. So the joint development agreement has to do with the land use, not the operation of development necessarily the project. It allows the projects to be developed and moving the floor area ratio from different lots. But for example, there's a whole
other. The joint development agreement does not refer to parking.
It does, and let me answer your question, or somebody's question asked how much parking is on the site, and per the permit, and it may be a little more, a little bit less as it was ultimately developed, it's 222 parking spaces, including the Luxury Row development, which is a whole other owner, but it is part of the joint development.
How many units are there?
Are theirs?
Yeah, Luxury Row.
I'm doing it off the top of my head. I want to say something like 40, but I don't.
Are those residential?
No, those are all commercial.
Commercial. So what's the requirements for commercial parking?
I think it's one for every 800 square feet or something to that effect. There's a chart in the LUO.
But you're taking the position that the record is clear that the use here is not residential, and that's the basis for the change in the restrictive covenants, correct?
Well, I want to back up even further. PACREP LLC, a separate legal entity, ultimately related higher up, is the developer of 2121 project. That started first. That was going forward. That was being developed. Once the 2139 project became viable, it's like, let's figure out if there's a way to put these together. But they're two separate permits, two separate processes, two separate legal entities.
Wait a minute. You mean they build this eight-story, what you call a podium, before they build 2121? Because it includes the you're saying that when you put in 2121, let's do 2139. Wasn't it always envision that there would be two towers? They're not connected then.
They are connected, but it was not always envisioned that they would be connected.
But how did you then build a podium that's eight stories high, not considering that you need to put 2139 in addition to 2121?
Because 2121 was being designed and constructed and starting to go forward. It takes a very long time, as you might imagine, for these things. While 2139 came online, was being permitted, parties get together, figure out how can we make this work. designing things.
And you're now, I think, attempting to explain the evolution of this issue having to do with whether or not this is going to be residential or hotel. And I assume that you're coming to the point where your position is the record's clear that this is hotel now, and that's a reason why these conditions could be changed?
Well,
is that it?
I guess I'm telling Your Honor is you're asking about the conditions for 2121, which is Pack Rep LLC, who is not present in this courtroom.
You're saying commonality of ownership.
No, Your Honor, I said they're affiliated up higher.
Could you explain why that matters? I guess we've talked about it now for some time. Perhaps cut to the chase and explain why the fact that they're two separate entities, albeit corporate affiliates, impacts our analysis of the issues we've heard.
Exactly, Your Honor. Because this issue has not been determined or resolved in any forum at this point, and it hasn't actually been tried.
Mr. When you say this issue, what are you referring
to? Sorry, the issue of lifting of the 2121 conditions, okay, and whether those should have been lifted from and bind 2121 is a different entity.
And what is your position as to what the appropriate procedural remedy Local 5 had with respect to the removal of the conditions as to 2121?
I acknowledge there are difficulties in the problem, but I do recognize this. The ZBA hearing for the 2139 project took more than a year, went on for a long time. And Mr. Kugel admitted that his client received notice of the key letter lifting the 2120 conditions by the latest September 2015, when it was part of the filings in the ZBA appeal for 2139. Okay? From that point in time, they did not seek to supplement their petition for appeal in 2139 to try to now bring in 2121. They didn't try to file a separate ZBA appeal based on, well, now we have notice, maybe we have 30 days from now. They have not tried to file a separate declaratory relief action in circuit court. Whatever remedy they have not tried to do anything.
But their argument is that the developer put this document into play, and thus it was fair game in the 2139 ZBA proceeding. What's your response to that?
My response to that, Your Honor, is that it was put in as a defense to an affirmative position that Local 5 put in. And they put it in saying, without authority, the mere fact that a next-door neighbor companion tower has conditions, it is ipso facto arbitrary and capricious that those same conditions weren't in the 2139 project. Begs the question, are they really in 2121? Well, the answer is, well, they're not. Now, we had to put it in. They've raised the issue, saying it has to be because it's over there, but they're not over there. Now, but it doesn't matter, and the reason is this. Those conditions aren't necessary in order for, and there's findings, there's testimony, the circuit court determined it, the ZBA determined it, that there are plenty of enforcement ability of the DPP to ensure that this project, which was approved as a hotel, and let's be real clear, there has not been pointed to any other project that has restrictive covenant requirements anywhere regarding this.
If your argument is, look, there's all these enforcement mechanisms, we don't need them, then what's the harm in having them? I mean, you're putting up a big fight to say, we don't need them, and if they're duplicative, then what's the problem?
The harm in having them, Your Honor, is despite what Mr. Kugel would like to believe, and if this ever gets tried, I'm sure there will be expert testimony on it, that requiring conditions such as that, number one, doesn't solve the problem because it doesn't mean somebody's not going to do something else with the project, as we know from TVUs, right? But on the reality is that there was an issue, and there still remains an issue, although the Ninth Circuit has decided, the U.S. Supreme Court has not, that the Securities and Exchange Commission took the position.
Did you appeal that? I thought there has already been a finding from the circuit court that struck that, and did you appeal that?
No, they struck the finding, Your Honor. We didn't need the finding for the 2139.
Well, but
so you have security issues to rely on. It's stricken.
Well,
it's
gone. But it has never been tried, Your Honor.
But that is why would the city be concerned about the filing requirements of the developer if it's a security that the developer has to go through the process?
Because, Your Honor, part of the whole WSD process is to try to allow for the refurbishment and the revitalization of Waikiki. And condo hotels have become the primary focus in across the country, the primary way that hotels become financed. So let's realize this is a hotel. The only difference is how it's owned. The mere fact that something is a condo, that's ownership. That's not use, right? So
having it as a declaration, however, you're saying it doesn't make any difference in terms of enforcement. If it's not a declaration, enforcement has to come from the government. If it's a declaration, other owners can seek to enforce the declaration. There's a difference in enforcement, isn't there?
In this condition, the way this is written, it said that there had to be a recordation of restrictive covenant on which units were going to go into the hotel pool and which ones weren't. And that's the problem, actually, because that makes it arguably an investor for SEC purposes, et cetera, and it becomes a whole different issue. It also said that that could be changed with approval of the DPP.
Okay, how did
so that could be changed?
No. I'm sorry. It says the director may modify the conditions by imposing additional conditions, modifying existing conditions, or deleting conditions deemed satisfied upon a finding that circumstances related to the approved project have significantly changed so as to warrant a modification to the condition. So this was a deletion of conditions. How had the circumstances related to the approved project significantly changed?
Your Honor, what I was referring to is actually Exhibit C, and I don't have the full Exhibit C that was lifted in front of me. My recollection was that within it, it said, and this can't be modified without approval within the Exhibit C. But to answer your question is how had this changed? The project itself had not changed, other than the fact what the director testified. And what he testified was that when these conditions were first put in, there was uncertainty. There was, and again, this isn't part of the record because 2121 record isn't part of this record, although there was an opportunity for it to be. Local 5 chose
yes,
not
and
to
you
take
could
that
have
up.
Brought it in too.
Pardon me?
You could have brought it in too.
I could have, but 2121 isn't part of this jurisdiction, isn't part of the issue on appeal, except to the extent of arguing and determining that those conditions aren't necessary here, and so it wasn't arbitrary and capricious. So
what do you suggest should happen if this court were to conclude that Local 5 should have the opportunity to challenge the modification? Where and how should that take place? And I realize that's a position you would probably oppose strongly, but trying to figure out procedurally, is it that we would this case would be held in abeyance while another case is conducted, that it could be done in this case, that they should go file a deck action? What exactly do you think the appropriate remedy in that instance would be?
I think the appropriate remedy, if Your Honors decided they should have received notice and that for whatever reason that they still have the opportunity, is that it should go to the ZBA. And I believe that's what Mr. Kugel said, if I wrote down his statement correctly, that he thought that there would have been an opportunity had they had notice to go to the ZBA.
In a separate proceeding?
I think in a separate proceeding and then potentially be consolidated.
You mean as an appeal of the modification?
As an appeal of the modification to the ZBA, as a ZBA appeal.
So the 30-day notice of appeal requirement just kind of set that aside?
Well,
based on due process?
Well, I was going to say, I would argue that the record is clear that they had notice by no later than September 2015.
But the time had passed to appeal the 2121 by that date.
Correct. But if Your Honors determined that they had a right to notice, then they received notice by September 2015, and they could have done something at that point, but they have not. And it was discussed, you know, about them doing something.
Well, they couldn't have filed an appeal on 2121, though. That's clear, right? Once, because years had passed.
The question is appealing this letter determination on 2121. Right.
Just to be clear, your position is they should have acted when they got that notice. They didn't, so this argument about 2121 is foreclosed to them.
Correct, except for I still think it's relevant, but it's relevant in a different way that they're trying to argue. At the ZBA, they were not asking the ZBA to make a binding determination on the 2121 project. They are doing that now. So what their relief has morphed over these appeals, the reason the 2121 was relevant for the 2139 is because they said, hey, there ought to be conditions like over in 2121. And so we said, well, look, this is what happened in 2121, right. And this is why it's not necessary here, right? And their argument that the mere fact that conditions were put in an earlier permit, you know, where does that stop? Is it, you know, the hotel in the next block? How about the next block from that? How about the next block from that? If they're all being operated and run that, should every condo hotel in...
Well, presumably their argument would be they're attached to this single podium and they're going to be merged into one project. I mean, that would presumably be their argument.
Correct, but it also is basically saying that, you know, let's assume Halekoa, for example, were on not federal land, right? The first tower was built decades prior to the second tower, right? Are they saying that the person who is approving the second tower has no leeway?
You think that's analogous to your case?
Well, I'm just talking about two towers that are connected, right? That's what comes to mind. And it was
well, not just two towers that are connected. I'm still reaching for your analysis about why these conditions really, if I'm understanding you, are superfluous. Because, of course, they weren't considered superfluous originally in 2121 because it was very much the focus of the hearing. Something happened that caused the planning director to decide they weren't necessary any longer, and you were right. About to explain that the declarations and the restrictive covenants, once 2139 was being considered, somehow didn't seem to be significant any longer, and as a minor alteration of the permit, planning director would remove the very conditions that were the subject of the hearing, right? The subject of the 2121 hearing.
No, there was no 2121 hearing.
Well, the 2121 process,
the process
resulted in these conditions that were there because of the participation of Local 5. Right.
Right? And so what the record in this appeal shows is the testimony of the director. And what that testimony says is when the 2121 permit was approved, it says, hey, this is going to be subject to further refinement with building plans, drawings, et cetera. The director testified that it was unclear, and there had been discussion about whether there would be a multifamily component to these projects, like I'm aware of some on the mainland I can't put on here, where perhaps it would be a floor by floor. This hotel, this floor would operate as a multifamily, this floor would operate as a hotel. There was also some discussion, I believe, about whether there would be separate entrances, et cetera. What the director testified to is that as the process progressed, all of that became clear, and they finally asked for a give us confirmation, 2121 developer, that this is actually the entire thing is going to operate as a hotel. And they did that. And so the director said, because there had been an issue of an SEC, which I admit that the circuit court said they didn't think that there was sufficient evidence to support that. What was in the record is that the DPP had looked into it and had determined that.
Can I ask you, would you agree that the letter was inadequate in terms of the findings that were necessary? I think Mr. Saito.
Your Honor, I'm not actually sure of that unless there is a letter that says that. I've looked at the the relevant section. It says it has to be
certain findings.
Based on these, but I don't see the word finding in there unless I missed
it. I see.
I don't see anything written that says findings in there. And certainly the director should have to back it up if challenged, that these were the
reasons. So this would all be on the merits if and when?
Correct.
Okay. At this point, and we've gone a bit over, but if other things that you would please wrap up and bring to the attention of the court, and then we'll hear from Mr. Kugel.
Okay. Your Honors, the only thing I would like to focus on here is basically there's a fundamental fairness on what is being litigated, what is being appealed. And what started in the ZBA, then morphed a little bit into the circuit court, and now it appears to be morphing even more into this court. And now trying to take the lens of what they're seeking now based on what they actually appealed and tried back in the ZBA, I think is inappropriate. That we have to look at what was requested, what options did they have. And to say the mere fact that 2121 came in is relevant to 2139, that's what it is. It's relevant. It's not that because it came in is relevant that the ZBA or the circuit court or this court should therefore determine what happens to 2121 on the merits and bind that project.
Could the ZBA have ordered, could the ZBA have included the 2121 administrative record as a part of this initial appeal and heard everything together?
If it had been appealed and part of the petition of Local 5, they could have heard everything together if that was made the decision, at which point I would imagine the developer of 2121 would have sought to intervene. But none of that happened.
Very well. Anything further at this time?
No, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Lovejoy. We'll hear from Mr. Kugel.
Thank you, and I'll be very brief. On the last point that you heard, I think
Can I just ask one thing? And again, the argument is Local 5 had notice while this other proceeding was underway, could have filed an appeal of the 2121 letter, could have sought a deck action, could have amended its petition but didn't do so, therefore not able to raise the type of or not able to assert the type of claims or seek the type of review that you're requesting now. What's your response to that?
Well, as we explained to the ZBA in the closing arguments, that the defense that they put on changed the case. Until a week before that, nobody knew other than DPP and PACREP that there was this September 6, 2013 letter. They served it on us 1 week before the contested case hearing, the evidentiary hearing commenced.
But they said it lasted a year. Is that accurate? I thought I heard they said it lasted for quite some time, and perhaps I misunderstood.
There was just 2 days of testimony.
I see.
That was on March 12th.
But I'm trying to understand, so your argument is you didn't have time to do those things, or you again, the argument is you had notice.
No, so you're right. I'm sorry.
Please go ahead.
We also argued to the ZBA that under Park versus Espinoza, which is an ICA case, but it's the normal rule that the pleadings are amended to conform to the evidence put on at trial, right? That's pretty typical. And what was put on in that case, the defense of that case was there was no arbitrary and capricious differing conditions because there were no differing conditions because they were waived. They put that at issue in the case before the ZBA, and they litigated it. And that was squarely before the ZBA. And so what they're telling you now is it, well, as soon as we had
so noticed, they were able to introduce evidence of the letter as a reason for why the condition should not be imposed in 2139, but the ZBA would not consider any other evidence with respect to 2121.
Right. The ZBA wouldn't consider whether that was a proper minor modification. In other words, whether that was legal or legitimate waiver of the condition. And they listened to the director testify about why he determined that it was appropriate to waive that condition and therefore why it was appropriate not to include the condition on 2139. And the director testified, and this is Record on Appeal Docket 22, page 11, Docket 28, page 35. This is the March 12, 2015 transcript at page 71. He said that after the 2121 permit was issued, quote, "It was clarified by the developer that all of the units would be used as hotel units, and so none of them would be used as residences, end quote. That is what the developer told him as the impetus for issuing this secret waiver letter. And then he also testified about the security issue that they alerted him to. And they said, well, gee, if you impose that condition, we may not be able to get our financing. And so there's a security issue, so you should waive the condition. And again, the circuit court struck those because there was not evidence about that. So I did want to point to this artificial distinction that PACREP and PACREP 2 are completely different entities who just happen to locate two towers on one podium, on one consolidated or jointly developed block in Waikiki. And both the ZBA and the circuit court have findings of fact that are contrary to that. The ZBA found that findings of fact 1 and 2 about this jointly developed project that's sharing amenities, that's all going to be operated as the Ritz-Carlton residences, and the circuit court found the same thing. And if there's any question that why wasn't PACREP 1 instead of PACREP 2 in this case developing, well, you have to look, I think it was Justice Pollack that pointed out, you have to look no further than the 2139 permit, which is being sought by PACREP 2, has condition I put in it that was made retroactively applicable to the project at 2121, which was developed by a completely different entity who coincidentally has the similar name of PACREP. It defies logic to then walk in here and say to this court, yeah, and they're both owned by common ownership, sure, but they're two very
How did they
projects.
Receive notice of the September 2013 letter?
I'm sorry?
How did PACREP 2 receive notice of the September 2013 letter if it's a separate entity?
I believe it was addressed to Jason Grossfeld, who is the principal for both PACREP 1 and PACREP 2. Your Honor also had a question about the number of parking stalls. I was able to check on that, and that's in the 2139 permit. At page 32 of the permit, which it is in the record, there is a chart which says that there is a required number of parking stalls for these units as hotel units of 218. The entire two-tower project will have a total of 222 stalls. In other words, four extra stalls.
Wait a minute. I thought 218.
Yes, 218. There is a table that gives a breakdown of the number of hotel units in Tower 1 and Tower 2, and they each require this 1-to-4 ratio. And then there's some commercial units, and they have a separate requirement of 800 square feet of commercial space equals one parking stall. So under the director's original analysis for the 2121 permit, only four units in this entire two-tower, roughly 500-unit structure could be used as long-term residential. Otherwise, everybody else is going to be parking out on the street.
Well, I thought that 2121 had 32 residential units.
The 2121 permit and the 2139 permit both said that the developer expected that a certain number of those units would be used as long-term residential. So that was the representation that was made to the director when he issued the permits. But there was no allocation or set-aside between units. At the end of the day, the director said, they told me they're all going to be used as hotel. So there is no requirement for a one-to-one parking because they were all approved to be used as hotel.
Is this the essence of the remand for you, Mr. Kugel, to address this issue about whether the record is clear that there would be only hotel use?
Well, the director's testimony didn't make its way into the ZBA's findings of fact.
But is that the issue that you're essentially expecting to contest on remand?
Well, if there's a remand, we would certainly articulate that the director had that representation made to him, but put in no condition that would ensure that that was in fact the case. And what he had in front of him and what both permits say is he was told they would be used for residential use, and he still did nothing about it.
And so your feeling is the declarations are necessary and the restrictive covenant should remain?
Yes. Yes. And that's what we articulated for the 2139. Those restrictive covenant conditions should have been put in on that one as well.
But I'm hearing two things. I thought the director testified that he reacted to information that it was going to be 100% hotel. But then you said that he had information that it was not going to be?
Yes, he explained at the ZBA that between issuing 2121 in March of 2013 and then issuing 2139 in July of 2014, he had a conversation with the developer.
Right.
And the developer assured him
it was going to be 100%.
That it would be. But if you read the 2139 permit, it can in the findings of fact of the DPP's permit and its analysis, it states one, the developer has represented that, or the developer expects that a certain percentage of these units will in fact be used for residential use,
but that's
not 2139. For hotel use.
That's 2139.
That's 2139.
And so Otto was talking about 2121, that he was assured it would be 100% hotel, right?
Yes, but he was also talking about the same reason why he didn't bother to include Condition C in 2139. And so he says that he was told they'd be 100% hotel, but everything in both permits says otherwise. And there's no representation, for instance, in the 2139, that the developer told me these will be 100% hotel use and none will be used for long-term residential. That would have been, I mean, if that conversation really occurred as he testified, that should have been in the 2139 permit. There should have been a condition saying that.
Did the ZBA consider the removal of the conditions in 2121 as a reason for not requiring the covenants in 2139?
Yes, Director Otta was explaining why he waived.
No, but in the ZBA ruling,
ZBA did consider it. They had those findings of fact 9 and 12 and conclusion of law 20 that were stricken by the court, and they were relying on his determination that there was a SEC or a securities issue about putting the units into a hotel pool. But so they did give credence to his explanation, but that was stricken by the court because it was unsupported by reliable, probative, and substantial evidence.
Very well, Mr. Kugel. Any other arguments to bring to the attention or wrap up for the court at this time?
I don't think so. I thank the court.
All right. Well, thank you to both of our counsel here this morning for your arguments. The court will take this matter under advisement.
Eku iluna, please rise. Kua ho'oku ia mai ne kea aha ho'okolokolo kie kie hanohano okomoku aina o Hawaii. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now adjourned.